Frenchy listening to Irish Radio Network, USA. Normally, I would be introducing a friend of mine who is a regular visitor to this program, but we have something else to flog in the meantime. So let me welcome Charlotte Moore and Kieran O'Reilly from the Irish Repertory Theatre. Charlotte, how are you?
We're all very well. We're all very busy. We don't quite know what we're doing, but we're doing it very well.
What happened to Child's Christmas in Wales? I mean, what are you, breaking tradition down there?
I am breaking tradition. I've done it about 12 times in a row, and I thought it was time to just try something new. And it's just a joyful piece, and it's working very well. It's great fun, and I'm doing 25 parts by 5 actors. So you know we're a little busy.
And
would you like to say what it's called, Charlotte?
It's called It's a Wonderful Life, Adrian.
Oh, my God.
I believe you probably know the movie.
Do I know the movie? If you nod off late at night, as I do sometimes, and then you forget, actually, that you've taken a nap, and you wake up and you're watching the same thing all over again. That's one of those movies
right.
Where you say, I think I know what comes next.
You
should. Yeah. You watched it 2 hours ago. So, but what is it about, Charlotte?
It's about a really, really nice guy from Bedford Falls, New York, who falls upon hard times and loses all his money. And his friends and an angel from heaven comes in to help him and save him. And all his friends come in to help him and save him. And it's a Christmas story. And as you might guess, It has a wonderful happy ending.
Terrific. All right. Let me welcome, of course, Kieran O'Reilly, who run short on actors, you jump in and do the bit yourself.
Yes, I do.
And you've done it well. Are you acting, directing? What are you doing?
I just directed Brian Friel's The Freedom of the City,
which
we're glad to say will be returning in January for an extended 3-week run.
Excellent.
In January.
Yeah. Well, good reviews.
It got very good reviews. Yeah, it was very well received, and we were very, very happy.
And now, friends, I would like to introduce a man. He is actually older than I am, but I did grow up listening to him and admiring him, and as a matter of fact, just found out today because he got his bio, which is fine. After 40 years, I'd like to see something written down as I welcome Phil Coulter. Phil, how are you?
I'm very well, Adrian. Pleasure to be back, as always. In fact, it's bad luck for me if I don't turn up and talk to you on it. Whatever the project may be, whether it be the release of a new CD or the beginning of a tour or something, it's kind of bad luck if I don't come and talk to the Godfather here.
Well, I thank you for that. But let me ask you, and indeed for anybody who's listening, to even give a synopsis of the life of Phil Coulter. I suppose we could start a composer, arranger, musician, singer, and like myself, a piano player. And
not in your league, though, Adrian. I keep trying, but I don't know. I've learned not to outreach myself.
No, it has become an inside joke because at around the time of the release of Sea of Tranquility and the Tranquility, you were here and you were visiting, as you had done. And it must have been decades ago because the keyboard in my office was fairly new at the time. It was secondhand, but it was. It was relatively new. And I was kind of reluctant to let you have a go at it, but you did. And since then,
I passed the audition today.
I maintain that this keyboard of mine was not meant for somebody who takes a cluster of keys at the same time. It is
one note at a time, really, is it? It's a one-man piano. Yeah, I get it.
But a television presenter, a television producer. As a matter of fact, let's go back to your early days in your native Derry, your house, a house of music.
Yeah, you know, I've said it many times that my first smart move was to be born in Derry, because music was and continues to be part of the fibre of life there. And during hard times, you know, when I was born in 42, it was the war years and, you know, things were pretty tight. Music was a critically important part of the whole way of life there. And it was far more important in many houses in Derry to have a piano. That was more important to have a piano than like a three-piece suite. Because you know, that ability to entertain yourself or entertain your friends, entertain the family, that was very much the way it was. I can remember countless occasions when, whatever the excuse would be, my dad was a cop, so if some of his friends were promoted and being shifted away somewhere else, there'd be a farewell party. That would happen in our house. If his replacement arrived, there'd be a welcoming party. That would happen in our house. So I kind of grew up with that feeling that music wasn't something that was kept just for Mass on Sundays or for the annual music festival.
Yeah.
Music was part of the fibre of life. And that's, you know, when that gets, you know, you kind of imbibe that sort of a feeling that music is something which enriches your life.
Your father was in the Royal Ulster Constabulary as a cop.
Yeah.
And as a Catholic, was there an awareness when you were growing up that was kind of...
No, there was no difficulty, I have to say. There was no difficulty at all. I think the timing was lucky, because my dad had retired out of the police force before the whole civil rights movement, where there was that confrontation between the marchers and the police, and reservists were brought in, and it all got very nasty. That would have been very uncomfortable, both for my father and for myself, I think, if he'd been in the middle of all of that. But fortunately, that didn't occur. Before we got to that civil unrest and the civil disobedience thing, whatever, my dad's role was more like, you know, the kind of community cop. You know, I mean, he'd be filling out forms for people, and he would have been, you know, a kind of community leader. But although the older that I got as I went through St. Columb's and to Queen's, we certainly were aware of the injustices within the system in the north of Ireland. We were aware that there was an institutionalized prejudice against Catholics in terms of jobs, in terms of housing, etc., etc. But I don't think any of us were aware of the fact that it was, you know, it was always percolating beneath the surface. Nobody was ready for that explosion when it actually all burst out.
And your mum from Belfast.
Yeah, from the markets in Belfast.
From the markets in Belfast. Now, was there a noticeable difference when you went to visit your mother's family and yours in Belfast as a kid?
Oh yeah, well, I mean, Belfast was the big smoke. You know, getting the train up to Belfast was a safari. You know, going up the Amazon, and there were trolley buses in Belfast, and I remember the excitement of going into Woolworths to the cafeteria, where you put the tray and you picked stuff off and you put it in, and you could take whatever was there. You know, you picked what you wanted to eat. The excitement of that, I remember it vividly. Even when I think about it now, my heart's beating more fast. Those visits to Belfast were terrific, to see all the, and being spoiled by aunts and uncles, because they were all in Belfast.
But it was a big, that was a big trip, and again...
Big trip, yeah. And when I went up to Queen's, and I was a fair bit older then, you know, 18, 19, I was, on one hand, excited about the possibilities, but on the other hand, completely intimidated by the place.
Mm.
You know, nowadays, kids of 18, 19, you know, they've probably been around the world a few times.
Yeah.
You know, Irish kids now are great travellers. They're in the four corners of the world. But then Belfast was the big smoke, and that was a long way to go. And the university and all of that represented, you know, the Lanyon Building at Queen's. It's a wonderful, wonderful campus, but it scared the life out of me.
Mm. In your house, you had the upright piano. Your dad fiddle player. Mm. Your mom, a piano player.
Yeah.
Did the piano come from Belfast?
I don't know where. I think the piano was a wedding gift from must have been from a well-heeled uncle or something.
Yeah.
But yeah, you know, I wouldn't give the impression this was a very musical household, you know, in terms of like the orthodox kind of music, because my father played the fiddle, played like jigs and reels and stuff on the fiddle.
Yeah.
While my mother vamped along on the piano, usually in a different key from when my father was playing it. So it wasn't that I was surrounded by any great musical excellence, but what I was surrounded by was the joy of making music. You know, right. And that's what stuck with me far more than, you know, any great technique.
And what about your siblings? Everybody take a crack at it?
Yeah, we were all sent to music lessons, and some of them actually thrived more than I did. I mean, I hated it when I went to my piano lessons. I hated practicing, and I hated scales and arpeggios. I hated the whole notion. I'd have far sooner been out playing football. But my elder brother, Joe, he took it seriously. He looked to be the one who was going to actually become the musician, while I was kind of dragging along behind. And my dad took me away from the piano because I wasn't making any headway. And it wasn't until I went to St. Columb's when I was 11, going on 12, that I kind of then was curious about the piano and wanted to know how it all worked. Mm-hmm. And that I've said it to this day that I was very fortunate at the age of 11 or 12 to learn a great lesson that the best motivation to do something was when you want to do it. I wanted to learn how this all worked, what to do with your left hand. You know, I could pick out the tunes with my right hand, but, you know, to get them both to work together was the talent.
And some of us are still struggling. However, let me ask you about your first choice of music, folk music, Irish music. Was that... choosing based on the distinct possibility that you were, in fact, that that's where the money was, that this was a commercial blossoming at the time. You had
quite the opposite. All of my advice from the powers that be in St. Columb's and indeed in Queens was that music as a profession was a very bad idea. And in fact, when I went up to Queens for my first year, I was really concentrating. I did Celtic studies, I did French, and I did music. But at that stage, it was pretty much my notion that my degree was going to be in modern languages, and that I fancied myself in the diplomatic service. Mm. I fancied myself as like our man in Cuba. You know, that's what I fancied wearing a white suit and a Panama hat and being like, you know, the cool guy around the world in Africa or somewhere.
It reminds me a bit of your own story. I mean, Ciarán. I mean, that's. This is like we've had this conversation before. I mean, this is running parallel to everything you have told us about yourself and your own upbringing.
Oh yes, I was a wonderful piano player myself.
He hasn't told you everything, Adrian. I'll tell you a few things.
Oh yeah. Okay. You've already actually told us.
I know that Phil has a story that I love anyhow about his practicing the piano as a young man and the.
I mean, as I was saying, I hated the practicing. I hated the scales, the arpeggios, the five finger exercises. But most of all, I hated my piano teacher. I've never hated anybody as much since. I used to lie awake at night thinking of ways how I could torture this man to death. You know, when I put like red hot pokers across his back, or will I stab him a million times or throttle him? Because he was one of the old school who sat at the top of the piano with a ruler, and if you played a wrong note, you got a crack on the knuckles.
Yeah.
So, you know,
many times with the approval of the parents who were actually paying for...
If I'd gone home and complained about the treatment, I'd have got a thick ear and said, just do what you're told. The man knows what he's doing. Pay attention. He shouldn't need to hit you with a ruler. Absolutely, yeah. You know, it amazes me now when kids get disciplined in school and go home and tell their parents, and their parents march up to take it up with the teacher. You know, if we had complained, if we had gone home and said, the Christian brothers gave me six today, you'd probably get another six. Why did you deserve the six in the first place? Another six slaps. So, yeah. No, it was a very different time.
Okay. When you... at what point did you say, listen, I can actually... I can make some money here.
Make a living at it? Yeah, well, I think... By the end of the first semester in Queens, I started my own band. I had a little four-piece band. And so we played for the student dances and that kind of stuff.
What was it called?
It was called Phil Coulter and the Glee Men, because I also started a glee club. And the little four-piece band with the kind of resident band in the glee club, so we were Phil Coulter and the Glee Men. And I had that going for like 4 years when I was at Queen's. And I think the penny dropped somewhere in the course of the second year that this is really what I should be doing. This is better crack than the French and the diplomatic service. And I was even prepared to forego the white suit.
When you know that Glee is probably one of the most popular shows on television right now in the United States, you were 40 years ahead of yourself with the Glee Club.
The Glee Club? Yeah. There you are. Yeah, I was.
Yeah. No, you're going to be sorry you're telling us all this. You know it.
It's a long road. When you think that you were at that time, as most people would have imagined, that things in Ireland, particularly in Northern Ireland, and indeed in Derry, it would take a lively imagination to think that 40 years later that your native Derry would become the UK.
UK City of Culture. Yeah,
I mean, City of Culture, which it is.
We're in a new era. There's no doubt about it. I mean, I think we've had a bit of good luck coming our way for a long time. You know, we were due a break. There's no doubt about that. And there were a couple of significant events in the last year, which certainly would have heralded this new dawning without a shadow of doubt. I mean, we've had some false dawns in the past, but there was a lot of unfinished business hanging out there. Most notably, Bloody Sunday. The Bloody Sunday inquiry, which was endless, it went on and on and on and cost fortunes, but it was worth every dollar in terms of the people of Derry, because when we had that public apology from a Tory Prime Minister, and a pretty, you know, abject apology, that was very significant in Derry. I mean, that had a huge impact, like, on the psyche of Derry people, and it drew a line under, you know, all of that whole era, all of that injustice that had been hanging over our heads.
Right.
And I think Derry people then said, right, well, that's it. We've sorted that out. They have apologised. We can't ask for much more than that. Let's get on with things. And 6 months later, we were selected for the UK City of Culture. So both of those things certainly have given us a new injection of life, no doubt about that.
Is there a sense, though, that whereas everything is, you know, your own composition, and, you know, we can always pray for
a bright
brand new day. Yeah. Has that day arrived?
Well, curious you should say that, because one of the things that when the bid for the City of Culture was up and going, they enlisted my support as a what they called a cultural ambassador, just to you know, wave the flag and beat the drum a little bit for Derry, which I was more than happy to do. And once we got the award, I was commissioned by the City of Culture to come up with a new song to celebrate the City of Culture, a new city anthem, if you like. Mm-hmm. And it occurred to me that it was kind of significant, because it was 40 years almost exactly since I wrote The Town I Love So Well. Yeah. And I knew that the song for the City of Culture year had to be a very different song. It could not be The Town I Love So Well Rides Again, you know, it just couldn't be, because that song was of its time and of its era. And I'm very proud of that song. I'm very grateful for all that it has meant to a lot of people. But, you know, you can never revisit that. Plus the fact that Derry is a very different place now from 40 years ago. And the song needed to be something which was more celebratory. So I didn't realize, until I sat down to work it out, I didn't realize just how clever I had been when I was writing The Town I Love So Well, that in the last line I had queued up the sequel, because the new song is called A Bright Brand New Day.
Terrific.
Yeah, and it is, you know, it'll get its first airing, the first concert to kind of launch the City of Culture is on January 20th. It's a big television special, and the finale of the show is going to be the premiere of the piece, A Bright Brand New Day. So I'm very excited about that.
In the meantime, we're going to listen to The Town I Love So Well, my guest, Phil Coulter, and also Charlotte Moore, and Kieran O'Reilly.
My current employers.
Are you your current?
My current employers, yes.
Very good. Actually, they're sponsors of the program, too, which I have.
So the kind of your employers as well?
Yeah, kind of, yeah, well, it does.
We're
big dealers. As Joe Biden said, it's a big deal.
Yeah, we have to watch our P's and Q's. The town I love so well.
When I returned, how my eyes have burned to see how a town could be brought to its knees by the armored cars and the bombed out bars and the gas that hangs on to every breeze. Now an army is installed by that spirit's been bruised, never broken. They will not forget, but their hearts are set on tomorrow and peace once again. For what's done is done, and what's won is won, and what's lost is lost and gone. Pray for a bright, brand new day in the town I loved so well.
Phil, that, there are many songs, and indeed, I know we've discussed this before, but are there particular songs that you have composed that have equal meaning, equal passion?
I think, and I make this point in the show that although I'm certainly very 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 proud of all of the songs, you know, but whether they were big hits or not, and especially the ones that you know sold a million records and made a lot of money, of course, I'm very pleased about those, and having number one records and winning awards, etc. But it's probably something to do with the passage of time and you know the maturity that. The number one record in the States doesn't really count as much in the great scheme of things as a song like The Town I Love So Well, or a song like Scorn Not His Simplicity, or Steal Away, or The Old Man. They all tend to be songs that are born out of some personal experience. Those songs have a lot more of me in them than any of the pop songs. And they're the ones that I would choose to. I mean, they'd be my favourites, and they're the ones that find themselves into the show. The songs I love so well, because you know, much as you know, as I said, all of the songs, you know, because you create them, you certainly have a soft spot for all of them. But there are, you do have favourites, and it's the favourites that find their way into the show without a shadow of a doubt.
Absolutely. Walk us through that period where you were all things to. In particular, in your arrangements and in compositions, and bringing a new Phil Coulter life into songs for groups like Planxty and take any of them for that matter. You know, Andy Irvine, Liam O'Flynn, they were there. They were emerging, but you seemed to give them some kind of theme, which, if in hindsight, being a great thing, you can see or you can feel a bit of Coulter in.
Well, I'm flattered that you put it like that. But certainly, I think it was a fortunate convergence of. The fact that I've had a great love for Irish music from as long as I can remember. As a teenager, I used to go to Irish college in West Donegal, to the Gaeltacht, to speak Irish, and that's you have that intense exposure to traditional music and Irish music, and that made a great impression on me. Sean O'Reilly was one of my great heroes when I was studying music, and I had a great passion for all of those songs, all of those melodies. And in many ways, the first piano album, Classic Tranquility, was something I'd promised myself to do for a long, long time, that I would take a bunch of those tunes that I had known all of my life, that I'd loved all of my life. And it's only as a songwriter sitting down to try and write a melody that you realize just how glorious some of those tunes are, like My Lag and Love or some of those wonderful tunes. But in terms of like the likes of Planxty, it was fortunate that, you know, I did have the passion for the music, and I knew that there was something special going on with Planxty. I knew that the individual members, you know, with Christy Moore, Andy Irvine, Donald Lundy, Liam O'Gofflin, this was a special bunch of guys. And they were not just another Deedley-eye band. Luckily, on a few levels, first of all, I could appreciate what they were trying to do. And I also knew that they needed that music, and their efforts needed to be translated on record to a way that it would reach as wide an audience as possible.
When you have, and now it's easy, of course, to look back and see that they're that they've all had their and still do have their
individual
career. Is that a bit hairy in terms of saying, listen, this is the way I think you should.
I understand the point you're making, and it was tricky because there were very strong characters, within Planxty, and each of them had their own very strong ideas, and so they weren't, you know, it was a tricky enough job. Those first, I think I made three albums with them. The first album, the Black Album, as they call it, is one I'm immensely proud of, and to me, not to be blowing my own trumpet, but when I listen to it now, to me it sounds as if I recorded it last year. You know, there's still a freshness about it. And I don't think anything has happened in that area of Irish traditional music and that ensemble sound between the vocals and the mix of the pipes and the bouzoukis and all that. I don't think anything has happened which is as exciting as Planxty was.
Well, one would imagine, though, that considering that there is a Phil Coulter sound... A team that we have learned to appreciate over the years, and then you say, you know, what would Phil Coulter have in common with Luke Kelly? I mean, again, here is an individual. Here was somebody who actually had a style and almost a gruffness that somehow doesn't automatically fit in with
probably unlikely bedfellows. And in fact, you know, for the first number of months in the studio, we fought like cat and dog.
I mean, I could imagine.
We argued about it because we both had strong ideas about how it should go forward. But I was smart enough to know that when it came to contemporary folk music, Luke Kelly knew a lot more than I did. You know, and I've said it many times, and I don't mind saying it again, that I owe a great debt to Luke Kelly because he opened my eyes to a lot of music and he broadened my horizons, and, especially in the area of contemporary folk music. And it was he who, by continually badgering me to write songs that were a little bit more substance than Pop It on a String or Congratulations or The Bay, to write songs that had a little more content. You know, he said, you should be writing songs, grown-up songs, he used to call them, you know.
Yeah.
I understood what he was saying, but, you know, there is
Did he come across to you at that period of time, like, here is a born Provo, he has a chip on his shoulder, something bothering him.
Well, he was, no doubt about it, Kelly had was no pushover, you know, and he definitely had the fire in the belly, there's no doubt about that, and very strongly held beliefs. And it took a long time, I think, you know, when I mentioned about the, you know, for months before we actually got on the same page. That would be, looking back on it, was a question of my gaining his respect and him gaining mine, I suppose. But you know, and it was really at his bidding that I thought, well, he's right, you know, that the content of the songs, I can't be operating in this world with the likes of Luke Kelly, and with kind of pop tra-la-la songs. There has to be something a bit more content.
Right.
But it's not as simple as it sounds, you know. I mean, it's writing Pop It on a String, Congratulations. That's one exercise as a songwriter. Writing a song about your firstborn son having Down syndrome is a completely different exercise. It's a completely different process that you go through, because now you're not pulling rhymes and glib lines out of the air. You're now talking about something that's coming from your own heart and soul.
And you're not talking about something that's toe-tapping.
You're talking about something which is painful apart from anything
else.
You know.
Okay, and a song that has meant so much to so many.
Indeed. Yeah, there's not a day goes by. I suppose certainly at least once a week now I get an email. And it used to be a note or a card or whatever from parents with a physically or a mentally challenged child who've discovered the song for the first time and said we never knew there was a song about this whole situation.
Right.
I think the only reason, I don't know of any other song that deals with it, but I do know that my fellow songwriters, unless they've experienced that from themselves, would run a mile from getting involved in what was potentially a minefield in talking about, you know, that whole area.
All right, that's enough out of you. I want to ask.
I want more of that.
I want to ask about what most of us are really excited about, and that is that, Christmas, Irish Rep, 25th season, and a month of Phil Coulter in the Irish Repertory Theatre. It's very exciting. It is.
It's marvelously exciting to have, because we've been fans of Phil Coulter for so long, and we just divulged to him that we used his music over the years and never paid him a penny for it. So it's actually great to have him here doing it live. And
look, don't feel bad. He's been playing my piano here in the studio for years. I never got a halfpenny out of it. I mean, yeah.
No, but all seriousness, it's a fantastic thing to have Phil on our stage. And last night was our first preview at the Irish Rep, and delighted to say that there was standing ovations all around. And that wasn't people trying to get up and leave.
I try to get up. I don't like him at all. He makes me cry every night that I'm there. And I mean, it's a real inconvenience.
Between ourselves, it doesn't take that much to make you cry. But anyway, we go. It's Phil Coulter in the songs I love so well. And night number one, did you get the feeling that this was going to be something that this is going to be Coulter doing what he does best?
I have to tell you one thing. You could hear a pin drop,
mm-hmm.
and then the audience would explode. And then you could hear a pin drop again. If he whispered, you could. It was so moving. The way he speaks and sings and what he says, a killer. See, I'm going now.
and there is nothing more delightful than to be in a theater where the entire audience are singing along.
Yeah,
and that happens several times throughout the show. We're under the guidance of Mr. Coulter himself.
Yeah, but there is no script. I doubt very much that in the month of December you will try to discipline yourself, Mr. Coulter, because that's an area that I have noticed through the years you lack a tremendous amount of discipline.
Too late to start now. What's the concentration?
But it is. You can't tell a story. You cannot do it. It's lovely to have a 20-piece orchestra. It's lovely to be in, Carnegie Hall and Lincoln Center, and indeed throughout the world and places you've gone to. But there is something about sitting down at a piano. There's something about being able to dissect a lot of your own compositions.
Well, I can't tell you how much I'm enjoying this, and it's a very, very different experience. And again, it's probably, to do with the advancing years and with the maturity. That I've been lucky, I've done the Carnegie Hall and the Radio Cities and the Lincoln Centers and all. Yeah. But there is something very relaxing and very, very honest, I think, about what's going on in the Rep. When Kieran and Charlotte invited me to do the run, I was thrilled. I'm very flattered. And it's something which just even in the rehearsals and last night getting the first one under our belt, you just get a real sense that this is something very special. You know, really, the theatre is very special. There's a lovely sense of a joint kind of an involvement here of everybody, all the staff right through. I mean, you get the feeling that people aren't working here just because it's their job. You know, they're very committed, and it's great to be part of that family, to be invited into that family. I can't wait for that. I mean, I know already that when it gets to the 30th of December, I'm going to be kicking myself and saying, God, that was over in a heartbeat.
Yeah. Let me ask you about This is a family event for you. This is actually, you have been here for just about every occasion at some point during the year I'm talking about in New York. Mm. But now you're here. You're here for the season. You're here for the month. You're here for Christmas. And did you invite your family to be here, or did you find out they were going to be here anyway and there's no point in you sitting at home over in Derry? So,
well, to be honest, it would have been very odd for me to have been here over Christmas, and even with Geraldine, my wife, who's part of the show, but without our kids. You know, when we have six kids, that's a big family. You know, that's a big Christmas lunch. You know, that's a big turkey. So it would have been very odd if they'd been away. So we're going to have five of the six of them here with us for the Christmas. A couple of our kids already live in the States. Dominique lives here in New York City.
In New York.
Ryan is on a soccer scholarship down in university in Tennessee. So instead of flying back to Ireland, he'd just come up to the city. One of our other boys is an officer with Shell at sea, so he's flying in from Fiji, and then our two girls are coming in from Dublin for the Christmas. So we're going to have those few. I do get a day off at Christmas, don't I?
No, half a day.
Oh, half a day, right? Okay.
Yeah.
Well, we have Christmas lunch after the matinee.
once you have the dinner done, you have to be down at the theater again.
Actually, what you could do is at least take one day off so that Charlotte would get some people to go see her live radio play "It's a Wonderful Life." I mean, are you, Charlotte? I just want to ask: are you relying kind of on a spillover?
I'm rehearsing "It's a Wonderful Life" and letting that go on. I'm upstairs seeing Phil Coulter.
And actually, Phil Coulter is a part of "It's a Wonderful Life," because yesterday Mr. Coulter came down and played a little piece of music for the show.
Which I recorded in my music.
Well, it's in the true spirit of the Irish rep. Yeah, you know, everybody's multitasking down there. Yeah.
Yeah.
His manager was on today looking for the money.
I was just going to say, read the fine print. we hope to have you soon again with us. As you have been coming here, and I do want to clarify, again, I said you were older than me, and actually you are. 4 months, 2 weeks, 1 day, seven
hard
hours.
To believe,
and
is all
I want to tell
it's
you.
Hard to believe.
Yeah. And we've known each other for so long. I remember you with a full head of hair and everything. I mean, that's how far back.
I'm just stunned. I'm here today, and I have to be discovering that there's somebody older than you. I didn't know.
somebody alive?
The stuff you have to take when somebody is sending you a check.
When you become an institution like you, you know, I mean, you just become an up.
But you have a beautiful young wife, Adrian. God bless you.
we have to take a break. We are going to take one more tune. And we'll be right back.
2013 is going to be a very exciting year in Ireland. Hello, this is Brian Stack, president of CIE Tours International, here to tell you that 2013 has been named the Year of the Gathering in Ireland. That's right, the year when there's so much happening with festivals, concerts, fairs and parties, all to celebrate visitors with Irish connections and those without Irish connections. For our part, we in CIE Tours International have the most comprehensive range of great vacations, priced to demonstrate the great value that Ireland has to offer. Take our Irish Spirit Tour, an 8-day all-inclusive escorted tour, including all meals, accommodations, transport and visits to attractions throughout the country, all from around $1,200, land only. Or you could combine a tour of Scotland and Ireland for just $1,700, land only. Why not see your travel agent or contact us at cietours.com and enjoy the gathering in Ireland. Thank you.
friends, through December 30th at the Irish Repertory Theatre, which, as most people will know, especially if you've been listening to this program for any time over the last 25 seasons, is located at 132 West 22nd Street between 6th and 7th Avenues. Website, www.irishrep.org. Telephone number, 212-727-2737. And if you... let me make a recommendation right now. Don't go on the fly. Make your reservation. It's a great concert, and it will be. And, of course, the star of the show is Geraldine Branigan, and her piano player for backup is Phil Coulter, because she doesn't have to pay him. That's
too true.
Yeah.
There's a recession on out there.
And, again, It's a Wonderful Life. I want to see that, too.
Oh, you must see it. It's great fun. Really.
Yeah. Okay.
So, and the best part of it is it's only an hour and 5 minutes.
Terrific. Play your cards right. You might get up, hop upstairs.
I do.
What's the schedule for...
For The Songs I Love So Well, it plays Tuesday through Saturday. At 8 p.m., except Thursday, which is 7 p.m. And there's matinees on Wednesday, Saturday, and Sunday at 3 p.m. So it's an eight-show week that Mr. Coulter has to have. So he can't go out at night. He has to go home to his bed.
Right.
He hasn't read that part of the contract yet.
That manager of yours.
You mentioned that.
Listen, you've taken challenges before there, Phil. You know, here's...
I'm game, Adrian. I'm game.
Yeah, I want to actually have you back closer to the end of the year. See just how you hold up. So I'll know what to expect when I'm your age.
Okay.
You know, I want to know months in advance how things are going to be. It's great having you and all of you.
Thank you,
I know
Adrian.
That this is for the
great
Christmas season. You're getting off light because normally you come in and you actually do some kind of performance. You mean this is it? Now this is your. Now that you got it made. Now that you got Coulter down there. Yeah. Okay. So long, you. All right. I get the message, Charlotte. Good luck to you.
Thank you, Adrian, and
for both of you.
Thank you. A
wildly successful year. I mean, it has been.
Thank you.
Been terrific.
Thank you, Adrian.
Can we ask you what's coming on in the new year?
Shall I tell him?
No.
No. All right. Okay, well, then I'm glad I asked. And the next time you're coming here, I won't ask you at all. Phil, it's great. We look forward, and it's great to have you and your family in town.
Thank you, Peter.
You don't mind if I slip out for a few days to go over to Ireland and check and...
The Christmas. Getting on without me? No, please do. Please do. Oh, I'm having.
And
great
at
time.
Any time, if you find that what kind of piano do they have down there? Is it better than mine?
Well, I'm afraid we have a state-of-the-art Steinway, a big 9-foot concert grand Steinway. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, okay, that settles it. Then you can't play mine this time around. Next time. Friends, the Irish Repertory Theatre now through December 30th. The Songs I Love So Well, with special guest Geraldine Branigan and our own Phil Coulter. You're listening to Irish Radio Network, USA.